Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Damage Report Under Lockdown. And it being Friday, I'm obligated to now present to you the host of the Happy Half Hour, Brett Ehrlich. How's it going?
Huge. It's going huge. I personally am enormous today.
Brett,
this is not the first time John has grabbed my face.
We were just, like, talking instead of doing some of the prep that we're supposed to do. As I'm literally saying that I've got this thing, I can handle this thing, I'm not doing any of the things I'm supposed to do to make sure that the show looks or sounds right. But welcome to what passes for the Damage Report.
Yeah, and I can't wait for today to pass and it to be the weekend.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Do you have any plans for the weekend?
Yes, I am actually on Sunday for, I believe, 2 hours. I'm going to be taking part in Jordan Yule's Fortnite charity stream, which, by the way, Brett, you should plan that as well.
I will do that. First of all, can you please move your hand away from my neck? It's
they
weird.
They can't see that.
Oh, I thought it was a screen thing.
I don't think so.
That's my trigger, by the way, on when I'm watching, like,
being choked.
Kelly and whatever, they're using the same screen capture technology as we are.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
so many mouse infestations of just, like, giant triangles, like, by people's faces.
Yeah.
Just holding them hostage. And it's like, someone please mouse off. I would love to play in that tournament. I was going to ask you about it. I'm going to DM the
DM
UHL.
Jordan. Demand entry. Yeah, about the mouse thing. So we've talked previously about, obviously, even weeks into it, some shows trouble in, like, running things exactly like they'd want necessarily. And this is just a small thing. And I don't know, honestly, what could be done. So I watched Top Chef. And after Top Chef comes on, Watch What Happens Lives comes on, which had Karamo on, which is cool because obviously, you know, we have, you know, new Karamo. And the host, his video / internet was a pile of butts. Like, how you were already rich before this happened, let alone all the resources that can flow to you. How does it look that way? I don't get it. Karamo looked sharp, not just in the ways that he always looks sharp, but his video was sharp as well.
I need to take a moment for the term pile of butts. I don't know
you
if
know
anyone
what I mean.
I know John's not gonna have it on the show today. He might. I don't know who his garbage person is. However, Alex Jones's video is circulating around the internet where he says he's gonna eat his neighbor's asses. No, I'm gonna eat their ass.
That undersells.
That sounds like
it.
A pile of butts.
Because he, in a rage, promises to eat your asses over and over, haul you up in a chain and eat your ass. Over and over.
And I wasn't ready for that too.
Yeah.
He's like, and I'm half globalist on my father's side, if you know what I mean.
I get it.
Is he gonna eat half my ass? I'm not sure.
Which half?
But the Jewish half. The globalist. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Half.
Let's be clear.
But yeah, so that's something that's gonna happen today that I'm very excited about on the main show. You're gonna talk about it, John.
Oh, is it on there?
Oh, yeah.
I
it's in the post game.
To
we
you
respect
guys.
Ourselves like this
That's
much.
That's funny. See, I almost sent it to you just like for fun, for Jenk to see, but I thought Anna would have no interest whatsoever, so I didn't even send it.
No, Anna sent it to me this morning, and she's like, do you think John will be down to talk about this?
I love that we're both remotely questioning each other's interest in a story. Anyway, that should be fun. That's something to look forward to. There's an episode of Happy Half Hour.
Yes, myself and J.R. Jackson drink survival drinks, and we make fun of the things we were talking about earlier, which is the setups that people have for the shows they're streaming remotely, so check that out.
Awesome. And we've got a lot planned for this episode. It's, you know, it's an important day. We're going to be talking about what this day represents, what's happening around America. Both Biden and Donald Trump have responded to the Tara Reid allegations, so we're going to get to that. We've got some new polls, not looking great for Donald Trump. And if anything matters, if you can go to the bank on anything, it's polls on May 1st. Anyway, but it's fun. And we've got our garbage people of the week. I've got mine. Brett's got his. We've also got the community chosen garbage people. So we'll be going to all of those. By the way, super inside baseball, behind the scenes stuff. But this new system where I can see the comments is like throwing me. Like, I like to see the comments. But the new system, the way that it works internally, if you haven't had to moderate chat, is previously anyone who had been blocked or banned or hidden or whatever for spamming or for racism, I don't know, whatever, I wouldn't get it. Now I get it, but it's in italics, so it doesn't offend me as much. I don't know, it's a stupid system. Why would I want to see it? Why is it still
not
being
only that there? But all the incentives when you design a UI for like the channel runners chat,
mm-hmm.
you should probably just log out since you don't need it. You would just see the forward facing one.
That's a good idea.
But what it does is the incentives are reverse. Like, for people who aren't the moderator, they want to minimize all that stuff. For people who are the moderator, they're like, here's the worst stuff that you could imagine.
Yeah, and I would argue, like,
hide it, show it. What do you want?
If 19 out of 20 messages are in regular text and one is italicized, I'd argue you're drawing attention to it at that point.
Yeah.
Anyway, my favorite game each week is to see how long we can go to the Friday episode before talking about any news, but I guess at some point we have an obligation. And so, you know what, Brett? Why don't we do that? We got some like shout outs we got to do. We got some like programming notes, as Anna likes to say, but we'll get to that a little bit later on. Let's start off with the news. Today is May 1st. It is International Workers' Day, which is obviously a big deal in the US and internationally in every year, but today in particular, it's an important one for people who are exercising their rights and organizing around the horrendous conditions that were already existent before the pandemic, but have been made worse in some significant ways. Employees at Amazon, its subsidiary Whole Foods, Target, FedEx, and other companies have been forced to work in unsafe conditions at the front lines of the pandemic. Many will either stage mass sickouts or simply walk off the job Friday in various cities to demand time off, hazard pay, sick leave, protective gear, and cleaning supplies, according to the AP. Some of that has been, you know, previewed in advance. There was a great write-up a few days ago on The Intercept about this. So this is a number of employees, thousands and thousands, at some of the biggest, the biggest employers in the country simultaneously walking out. We'll get to their demands in just a little bit. But first, Brett, I want to give you a chance to comment.
It's absolutely terrifying. Even on our morning meeting for the show today, Jared was talking about, like, because we all like the experience of going to Whole Foods or essentially like any supermarket that you would go to is you go out and you personally just have to be there for like 20 minutes. And you have your contaminated hand and you have your non-contaminated hand and you're tracking what you touched and what you're not touching. And you're trying to, there's some places have gone so far as to have like an arm grasper so you don't have to touch your hand to open the frozen food section.
Huh, I haven't seen
all
that.
All of that. That's interesting. Yeah, so that's a really nice thing to do. Then you need to just make sure to wash your hoodie, which you should be doing anyway. Hashtag wash your hoodie. But everyone goes through their crazy crippling neuroses when they go for the 20 minutes that they'll be spending at the supermarket for the week or the 2 week span as people hoard. Now, imagine being the person who has to work there. Not only imagine being that person, but imagine what it must feel like to have to go into Whole Foods and they have an area where they screen you, take your temperature, reminding you, which is something you haven't forgotten in by any means, that you have to be at work throughout this crisis.
Yeah.
And then the most contaminated place is the cashier's window. And they've put up these plexiglass things, but all of this is happening and you are quarantined in the contaminated area, the one place that everyone would like to close, but they can't because everyone needs to come there to get food to survive. That's why it's open. That's why it's essential. And the thing that must make it more difficult throughout all this is seeing statistics like amid the coronavirus, while you're not getting more pay and while you are not being relieved in any tangible way, Jeff Bezos's personal fortune has risen by $24 billion.
Oh my God, yes. That's but we have at the end of this segment, we have just a little bit on Jeff Bezos. So not necessarily uniformly good news for him recently. So let's go back into some more of the concerns that have been expressed by some of those who are organizing today, doing the lockouts. And I know, and by the way, obviously there are people, you know, working in these industries that are doing that. But there's also, you know, tons of people across America and around the world that are standing in solidarity in terms of not not shopping at these places, whether in person or online at the same time. Another demand that's been made is increased transparency from companies about the number of COVID-19 cases in their facilities. There have already been cases where workers have been lied to about the number of people that have come down with coronavirus at particular locations, probably because these companies are desperately trying to stop exactly these sorts of walkouts. One great example of that is Christian Smalls, who lost his job as a result of raising concerns about the conditions at one warehouse. He put out a news release for today saying, "Our companies have failed us during these unprecedented times. At the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, essential workers were subjected to exposure in our workplaces due to lack of PPE, flawed policies, and dense safety guidelines. Because of the failings of our employers, many of our fellow employees have contracted this deadly virus, and some have died." It's locations like Whole Foods and Target and Amazon and things like that, but it's also other sorts of essential personnel, including nurses at scores of hospitals across the country, planning to take to the streets today to protest a lack of PPE. You also have independent truckers fed up with low freight rates, planning a congestion-inducing slow roll in their rigs through parts of LA, Chicago, Washington, and other major cities. And so it's basically across all of the different sorts of essential workers that you can think of, trying to draw attention to the continuing issues that they are facing that have received very little focus from the government over the past month.
And it is astonishing the amount of effort put forward by people who should be putting. So I guess the point I want to make is there's a lot of people who are putting forward a lot of effort to stop the spread of information about COVID-19 when they would be better served stopping the spread of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many people out there who are trying to silence the voices of Christian Smalls, people who are just trying to say, we need to know more. We need to know who has it, who's been exposed, and I need you folks who are charged with keeping us safe to know that you failed. Not because I particularly want you to be held responsible in any other way than to keep me safe, to change your behavior, because right now there are no consequences for people mishandling this crisis.
Yeah. But perhaps consequences for some other issues, we'll see. Related to this, I do want to let people know, and this came out just this morning, we've got Congress members from both parties demanding that Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos appear in front of them to explain previous sworn statements by a top Amazon lawyer about business practices that may have been criminally false or perjurious. The request follows a report in the Wall Street Journal just last month, potentially a few weeks ago, saying the company used business intelligence gleaned from third-party sellers operating through Amazon in developing its own competing products, members said in a letter released Friday morning. That is going to be interesting to see, because they have at least publicly said that they don't do anything like that, that they do compete, but it's sort of, it's like a fair, like, battleground that they're engaging in. But no, if they're actually using the intelligence gathered by those to then take them out, I think we have a right to know about that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so frustrating. And then behind the scenes, there's a story that Jonathan Larson wrote on tyt.com/investigates that you should check out that talks about all the angling that's happening behind the scenes, things that you might have heard rumblings about, but he puts it out pretty clearly and tracks the money behind how folks out there who are the business lobbies and the business interests have put so much money forward to get you back to work, which puts you in the line of fire, but then also gets the legislators to put forward legislation that would completely absolve them of any financial responsibility or criminal penalty or tort penalty for making you sick. Mm-hmm. You can't sue them. I mean, and a president who just behind the scenes railed against his campaign manager for not having his poll numbers up, he's shouting, saying, "I'm going to sue you for that." And Trump saying he'll sue everybody for everything is trying to eliminate the one reason that people should be able to sue, and the reason behind the progressive movement in the first place in many respects, which is to protect you from the whims of the people who can put you in harm's way.
Yeah, Exactly. Yeah, and we had talked earlier this week about the fact that Trump was saying one of his priorities is going to be protecting companies from lawsuits of employees who are exposed to coronavirus at their jobs. Just yesterday, it was like one article was summarizing most recent statements. Both Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump are saying that when the Senate gets functioning again, that's going to be the first priority is and like imagine like what your worldview has to be to think that that's the most important thing that people have been calling for in the weeks since any aid was presented to them.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
For at least weeks now, people have been calling on Vice President Joe Biden to respond personally to the allegations that have been made against him by Tara Reid. Up until this point, his campaign has put out a statement. Female surrogates of his have come out and responded to it, including Nancy Pelosi yesterday. Today was the first time on Morning Joe where he was asked about it. I want to show you just a couple of excerpts from that interview.
That you have said in the past that if a woman goes under the lights and talks about something like this, we have to consider that the essence of this is real. Is the essence of what she is saying is real? Why do you think she's doing this?
I'm not going to question her motive. I'm not going to get into that at all. I don't know why she's saying this. I don't know why after 27 years, all of a sudden this gets raised. I don't understand it. But I'm not going to go in and question her motive. I'm not going to attack her. She has a right to say whatever she wants to say. But I have a right to say, look at the facts. Check it out. Find out whether any of what she says is asserted or true. And based on the investigations that have taken place so far, to the best of my knowledge, by two major papers, they interviewed dozens of my staff members, not just senior staff, but staff members, I'm told, at least that's what they said. And yes. Nobody, this was not the atmosphere in my office at all. No one has ever said anything like this.
So, Brett, that's the first section. We're going to have more. I will say that, so Mika basically asks the same question a bunch of times, and I get it. You can't ask him just once, have him say it's not true, none of it's true, and then move on.
Like, she kind of just right, cool. Kept... Do you think baseball's coming back? Like,
exactly.
No, yeah, you can't really move.
Well, that and if she and if she had, it would have been incredibly frustrating. But it also, she didn't ask like a bunch of different questions. She kind of just said the same thing over and over again, and it kind of gave me the vibe. And I understand this is like me trying to like read someone's mind, that she, like as a member of the media, has been criticized for not talking about this previously. And they first talked about that, the criticism, before Biden came on. It seems like sort of like a defense. I'm taking this seriously by saying the same thing over and over again, but not that can't get to anything new, anything true necessarily. So I found that to be a little bit frustrating, especially if this is going to be the place where the interview happens. I want it to be as good as possible.
It's a weird position. It's that privilege that guys have where if, you know, because of the legacy of sexism in workplaces throughout American history, like Mika Brzezinski's put in a very difficult position where she has to speak for all women. and guys don't ever really have to speak for all guys. White guys definitely don't have to speak for all white guys and all guys at all. But that's what happens. I mean, and you, everybody has to make decisions as to what's appropriate here. I think there's a lot to unpack. I think there is so much plaque built up on the pipe of justice and decency in America that you have to, there's so little room to really move around and function and figure out how to be the best person and live up to a good moral code here. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so messed up. And we point that out about, like, the principled stands. Everybody said that they were taking a mainstream media when talking about Kavanaugh. And if the reason you were doing that was taking a principled stand, then you need to take the same principled stand here. And you need to do the same ethics math. Just bring out that worksheet and say, what were my orders of operations here? How much, I mean, then you're in that area. And it's a weird area. So one point from like a mental health perspective, you have to really figure out how you yourself are going to handle this. You have to communicate your options to yourself. Like, am I going to do ethics math? Am I going to compare from here's zero transgressions, here's this person is actually better than the average, and here this person's way worse. Like, where does it fall? Now I'm trying to be dispassionate, but I'm belittling it because I'm taking a person's human experience of going through either what she says to have done or someone's making it up. Like, these are just our options, not what happened. And I'm assigning a point scale.
Yeah.
Essentially, that's what a lot of people are doing.
Yeah.
But then you have to, you kind of have to appraise, like, are they taking a principled stand? And how much does that, if you're now doing an invective of mainstream media, what does that do to Tara Reid if what she says is true? And you have to, and I find myself sounding like a total jerk saying if what she says is true at all, I don't know what to do.
Well, yes, I you're just trying to be fair and honest by saying that because we don't know. There's very few people, it seems, that are being entirely consistent. It's one of the most, I think for a lot of people viewing this, is probably one of the things that's been most frustrating about this is the massive amount of hypocrisy. And it's all over the place. I mean, there are people who we feel like should have taken it seriously early on. And again, we shouldn't have to give this caveat over and over. But taking it seriously doesn't mean uncritically assuming that every claim that is made is 100% true and giving the maximum consequence for it without any follow-up. That's not what it means. So there have been people who've been very disappointing on that side. There's also people, I mean, Breitbart isn't running articles about this to continue their long-running campaign to believe women and advance their position in society. So there's people who are being incredibly fake on the other side as well. Now, we have more that we're going to say about this, but I do want to make sure that we get to more of the video. So here is, it's a similar sort of question. We're going to see if Mika is able to get to something new.
Are women to be believed unless it pertains to you?
Look, women are to be believed given the benefit of the doubt. If they come forward and say something that is that they said happened to them, they should start off with the presumption they're telling the truth. Then you have to look at the circumstances and the facts. And the facts in this case do not exist. They never happened. And there's so many inconsistencies in what has been said in this case. So yes, look at the facts. And I assure you, it did not happen. Period. Period.
Okay, so we have been wanting people in the media to take this seriously. We've been wanting Joe Biden to respond to this. Just yesterday when we were talking about it with Aaron Ryan as the host, I was saying that, but not because we believed that there's any way to know for sure that Joe Biden talking about it is necessarily going to prove anything. I mean, look, someone being asked a question, especially repeatedly and answering to it, the way they answer can potentially give you an idea of how truthful they're being. I mean, you know, back in 2016, Donald Trump, when he was asked about the women, the way that he would attack them or say, you know, I wouldn't have assaulted them because they're too ugly, that is not necessarily going to reassure people that he didn't do this. So it's not impossible that we could learn something, but this was the most likely outcome, that he's asked over and over about it. He says it didn't happen over and over. Now, there are things lacking. The fact that in that appearance and in his statement that he put out, he didn't directly address any of the corroborating witnesses So that's a weird thing to leave out. I don't understand why that wasn't a bigger part of it. But the most likely outcome was going to be, he asked about it, he would say that it didn't happen. And that's where we're at now.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think is going to happen now?
I mean,
what's next?
Well, it's 2020, so nothing good, I'm going to assume. Look.
Right. I look at the horizon of the ocean to see if Cthulhu will eventually emerge.
Yeah, nothing good. Look, I think he will be asked about it in future interviews for a while. I doubt much new will come of that. Perhaps he'll actually be asked about these other individuals, but what's he going to say? He doesn't know the other individuals. He might not even remember any of this because of, you know, the obvious context that this election
and
is...
And dude, everybody has to ask themselves and be honest with themselves why they are responding to this story the way they are responding to this story. Yeah. Everybody needs to do that. You know, me, you, everyone.
Yeah.
If I were to paraphrase the way a lot of folks in mainstream media are saying, the thing that's probably on their mind, they're saying they're either quiet or they're saying fire Chris Hayes for saying that it happened and being utter hypocrites because a second ago they were like, let's, you know, go after Brett Kavanaugh.
Mm-hmm.
Was the reason they were doing what they're doing with Brett Kavanaugh because they were taking a principled stand and believing women, or it was because they didn't like Brett Kavanaugh? And when I talk about the plaque that's built up over the years, I'm talking about some of the reasons people were saying, let's back up Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, was because they were taking a principled stand. Others were thinking, well, Merrick Garland should be that nominee.
Mm-hmm.
So there were some really terrible, horrible, no good, very bad things that Mitch McConnell did that essentially set fire to the Constitution to block Merrick Garland. What do I do? Mm-hmm. Have I been playing easy? Have I been playing mellow? Have I been, you know, is it like good move, man? Or am I gonna, I have to ask myself, why am I doing what I'm doing? And it's not easy. And I mean, one of the easiest things to do is take a principled stand. So why not take a principled stand? That's one aspect of it.
Yeah.
But I guarantee what's going on in everyone's mind when they're choosing not to cover this is probably, I don't have the luxury to really care about this right now. Trump is a terrible president. I don't have the luxury to be able to really dig into this accusation the way I would in a different time when so much else wasn't on the line. But what they are actually saying is that they have the luxury not to care about this.
I think, look, that is a critical view, but I think it's almost too understanding. I think for some of these media figures, it's a little bit more just, it could hurt Biden, let's not talk about it. Like, there's going to be shades of gray, there's going to be a gradient or whatever.
That's what it is, but that's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and look,
I think you're being unfair if you don't think they're thinking. I mean, how are they not thinking, I don't have the luxury to care about this?
I don't know how conscious it is. Like, there's a version of what you just said that I think is consistent. I mean, even, I don't want to speak for these individuals, and there's going to be nuance that's going to be lost in me recounting it, but this week, Francesca and Aaron both had versions of actually taking seriously the allegations, hoping that justice will be served, and also believing that women are going to be far more at risk under a Trump presidency, which is what a lot of people who have been consistent about sexual assault are now saying. So everybody's going to have a different sort of take on this. I hope that people will at least strive to be consistent, and a lot of people so far are not doing that.
And there's a theme here, I think, and you can call me an idiot because I probably am, but when you do the polling of who is more against, or I forget what the poll was, but it's like, who's freaking out about the rights of minorities right now, as Biden would affect them, it's white people who are freaking out about it more, because from what the articles about that says is, like, the people of color, the ones who are actually at risk, they are put way more at risk from a Trump presidency. And they're like, listen, I know my choices. I'm sad. I'm going to have to go back to a time where I'm just like trying not to have the worst thing happen and just have a bad thing happen. And it is a flavor of white privilege to be like, no, you got to fight harder. Let me fight harder for you.
Mm-hmm.
When there's a lot of cynicism and rightly so as to whether people are actually going to make any changes for them.
And by the way, I'm not going to call it individuals, but I'm seeing with one eye in the chat versions of, you know, why in her police report wasn't she more explicit about this individual thing? Or why did she wait so long to confirm it? Or why did she tweet in support of Biden? And I get why are so common, but that does not mean that it didn't happen. In her case or with any allegation of sexual assault, we don't get to say you're not a good enough victim or you didn't act the way I imagine I would have acted if I was raped. That's not a thing that I'm going to engage in. I would hope that no one engages in that. These are complicated situations.
Yeah.
And
probably what's going to happen is nothing.
Yeah, probably nothing. What I will say,
it's going to be made. I mean, we're not going to have an effect on it in the long run, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Call me someone who's given it. And Trump is going to, as we'll get to later, like selectively position himself to just create a little more inconvenience for Biden without creating comparatively more inconvenience mm-hmm. for himself from an electoral standpoint. And I use the word inconvenience because there's privilege baked into that.
Yeah. So we're going to turn to his response to it in just a sec. I will say, look, we're going to continue to keep an eye out for developments in the case. I mean, there's some question about what records might be available to corroborate it. He says his personal records at the university wouldn't have anything about it. That seems sort of convenient. He says there's this other place that we could hypothetically find if there was the report, but those people are now saying we don't keep that sort of documentation. So, look, we're going to have to see. So, as there are developments, we will report on them. We will try to be fair and consistent. I care about this story because of the experience that Tara Reid says she went through and the seriousness of the allegations. It is not some sort of convenient political thing that I'm going to, you know, use like Breitbart might be using right now, but I'm going to take it seriously in a way that they won't even as they use it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, I understand. So, I believe you when you say that.
We have been waiting to see what will Donald Trump say about the allegations that have been made against Joe Biden, and here is his first crack at it, and it's interesting.
Your campaign and surrogates going after him pretty hard with regard to these allegations from Tara Reid. What do you say to Joe Biden?
I don't think so. I don't think they're going after him hard with regard to Tara Reid.
Allegations, and what do you say to Joe Biden?
I don't know anything about it. I don't know exactly. I think he should respond. You know, it could be false accusations. I know all about false accusations. I've been falsely charged numerous times. There is such a thing. If you look at Brett Kavanaugh, this is an outstanding man. He was falsely charged. What happened with him was an absolute disgrace to our country. And I guess three of the four women have now admitted that. And of the fourth, give me a break. I mean, take a look. 36 years. Look, this is a fine man. I saw a man suffering so unfairly. I'm talking about Brett Kavanaugh. So, but I don't know. I can't speak for Biden. I can only say that I think he should respond. I think he should answer them.
Okay, so that I was taken a bit by surprise by that response. He did not come out aggressively again. So you're not. So what were your thoughts when you saw that?
Well, just because he didn't now doesn't mean he ain't gonna.
Yes.
All 100%. Of Trump's ways of going about this is he's like, the guy's got till November mm-hmm. if he allows the election to happen. So he's just going to see. He's a wait and see attitude to see because Biden's coming out that today. You know, that's his. It's so fresh. Trump has a daily venue, a multiple times daily through his Twitter and his fake press conferences where he can control a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't got to do it today.
Yeah.
And then just what are you implying? Like, obviously, is Trump self-aware enough to realize that if he goes after Biden for sexual assault claims suddenly he opens himself up to criticism. You're asking yourself if Trump has a level of self-awareness, and if he does, cares about it, cares about being a hypocrite, cares about putting forth a double standard just blatantly before America. No, he doesn't. Like, oh my God, let's see what he does. We know what he's going to do. The question is when.
Yeah, see, I agree with your first part more than your second. Like, his concern over opening himself up to the same attacks, I don't know. I mean, look, he brought, you know, Bill Clinton's accusers to the debate with Clinton. Like, I think he knows that those attacks are coming. I don't know. I think it's more Biden's time and, you know, waiting to see what happens. One thing I know for sure is that when he said there, I don't know anything about it. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. How many people did you send to Ukraine to try to track down any bit of material about Joe Biden that you possibly can? But there's a woman who says that he raped her and you weren't interested enough to find out some basic details about it. That is, of all the things that are not true, that was the least true thing.
I don't know if he has the exact tweet framed yet. Like, that's what he says when he doesn't have it ready. It's like, I don't know about that, but if I had to translate, if I had to do the honest press conferences version of that, it's like, I don't have the actual tweet framed and ready yet, but I know it's going to be something about the media's double standard and how they're victimizing the people. And I'm going to try to pull some kind of equivalency between me and Joe Biden so it cancels out in your mind that we're all under assault. But in the meantime, this poor woman.
Yeah. Yeah. He does get to sort of pretend to have empathy that he definitely is not capable of actually experiencing. Yeah, he at some point, this is going to, maybe he's just going to have the surrogates do it. Maybe that's what it'll mainly be. But the idea that at some point there's not going to be an 11 p.m. tweet attacking Joe Biden about it or a comment on the debate stage, I've been saying from the beginning, and I will continue to say, that stuff is coming. It is too much. It is too good for him to not use that to attack Joe Biden, especially if he's worried about losing, if he feels like the polls aren't moving in the right direction. He is 100% going to do that. He might be sort of being careful now, which is noteworthy, but the attacks are already coming. They're just not coming from him necessarily. Behind the scenes, some of the polling data that's been coming out has apparently been grading on Donald Trump. When presented with polls, being done by the RNC and other internal Republican organizations, he apparently responded recently by saying, "I'm not effing losing to Joe Biden," he reportedly said. This is on a call with Parscale, that's his campaign coordinator. According to multiple sources, he started cursing at him. He also apparently is threatening to sue him, which is interesting. I've never heard of somebody that feels like some temporarily bad polling is suable, and that if a person were to be sued, it would be your campaign manager. What? You don't have more of a direct control over your polling, Donald Trump, than the guy who's like working on your campaign?
Right, but when he says I'm going to sue you, it's essentially I'm going to start a litigation that prevents me from paying you the money that I have agreed to pay you in the future, or that invoiced me for and I haven't done it. Like, that's specifically it. He is trying to do that thing where he's like looking over to see if there's a scratch on something he bought. So he's like, I get to keep it, right? But I'm not paying you because there's a scratch on it. Like,
exactly.
That's
yeah,
what he's
I
doing.
Ate the cake, but there was a hair on it before I ate it.
Exactly. That's what it is.
Yeah. Now, he denies that happened. He says that he did not say that he was going to sue him. I guess the multiple sources are just making it up. And I'm not saying that he actually wants to. He doesn't have, he's got like a goldfish memory. Like, he experiences wild outbursts and emotional tantrums, and then he moves on. He hates people, and then he likes them again. It's all contingent on what they're doing for him in the moment. So it could have both happened, and he's best friends with him again.
The goldfish memory thing is so perfect, because isn't during either Finding Nemo or Finding Dory, isn't one of the things that Dory does is repeat the same things over and over again in a row to keep them in her mind so that she won't forget like her near-term tasks?
Yes.
That is exactly what Trump does with his Twitter feed. It's like, sleepy Joe Biden, sleepy Joe Biden, sleepy Joe Biden, Mexico, 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 sleepy Joe Biden, Mexico, China, sleepy Joe Biden, Mexico, China, Mexico. Like, that is it. And he keeps like four messages that take seven total maximum seconds to repeat, so he doesn't forget any of them.
Yeah,
and if one drops off, One drops off, Russia, Russia, Russia. He'll forget it for a long time. Russia, Russia, Russia won't be there. He's replaced it with China, China, China. Yeah. And he's keeping his little Dory brain full.
Exactly. That should be a video. That's a good analogy. So look, the reason I want to talk about this was not just to you know, mention the fact that he's apparently mad at his campaign manager, or was briefly. And it's not even that the polling necessarily matters too much. In, like, just saying, here's a random poll about what's supposed to happen in November, that doesn't really mean anything. The reason I'm interested in a poll that I'm about to show to you, though, is that we're still experiencing whatever effect the pandemic is going to have on the election. From the very beginning, we've been saying it is not an open and shut case as to whether this will hurt or help him. It might change over time, and it might change based on his response to the crisis, and it appears that that might be what's happening, because early on in the crisis, the first few weeks or so of it really hitting America hard, his favorability ratings, particularly in certain demographics, started to go up, including in the poll I'm about to show you. But that has not maintained itself. And so currently, and by the way, this is a PRRI analysis. It is primarily interested in different religious demographics. Currently, 2/3 of white evangelical Protestants, nearly half of white Catholics, and 44% of white mainline Protestants hold a favorable view of Trump, a significant decline from their March 2020 rating, so in the early response to the coronavirus. There, he was 11% higher with white evangelical Protestants. He was 12% higher with white Catholics. He was, it looks like, 18 points higher with white mainline Protestants. Now, he's still doing well among these groups in general, but that is a very large shift to experience in a 6-week period, in a 4-week period, something like that.
I love the term mainline Protestants. It's like, give me that Martin Luther. Give it right here. Just let me mainline some feces.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's, first of all, I'm surprised. I get that, like, just because you are a Protestant doesn't mean that, you know, you're technically a WASP. Doesn't mean that you are a Republican one. But yeah, it's difficult in these times to look around and see that he is doing a good job. He is trying really hard to insulate himself from any blame. The question is, will people remember the ridiculousness that he brought up along the way later? And that is on the people running against him to message effectively, and to the same way Swift Boat made its way into your parlance along the way and no one really knew what it meant. Like, we have more to work with now. There is more to work with, like, disinfectant. Mm-hmm. The word disinfectant should resonate through everyone's mind. Like, as ridiculous as it was, hydrochloroquine at least sounded like a medicine. Mm-hmm. Disinfectant. Mainline Protestants should remember that Trump told them to mainline disinfectant.
Yeah, 100%. And there's going to be more of that to go around. Really fast, I want to give you a little bit more information. I don't know if this is one of the polls that Trump was losing his mind over, but potentially might want to, at least, or it might want to change his strategy as a result of this. I mean, how great would it be if seeing himself plummet in the polls led to him doing the right thing vis-a-vis coronavirus? That would be great. Since when has a poll had a positive outcome? But anyway, Trump's favorability in battleground states specifically, again, since March, has dropped from 53% on average to 38% on average. Among non-college graduates in battleground states, he's dropped 20 points in 1 month, putting it more in line with his favorability in 2019. So look, that does not mean that he is at all-time lows or anything like that. He had, among some of these groups, been rising, especially, again, during the early part of this pandemic, but that appears to not be holding out. And who knows what's going to happen, but if there was going to be something that was going to hurt you in the polls, this seems like the sort of thing that should have that effect. Being completely uncaring in the face of so much human suffering, presiding over 64,000 deaths and not seeming to care about it, indeed, members of your administration declaring it to be a great victory, that should have a negative repercussions on your numbers, and it appears like it is.
Yeah. The goal of this administration was to get away from finally address, like, what was happening at the tail end of the Obama administration was to get away from having to address very real, like, by and large, racial issues in America, like the Black Lives Matter, like, finally being able to get news coverage around the articulation of racial inequality in America was where we were at. And this Trump very successfully, I guess, shifted it away from that, shifted it back toward like, oh my God, to get everyone to say, just let me get back to the time when we were focused, when we were painfully focused, like we caused some pain in people who never wanted to address it, on focus on things that affected a lot of people who had been oppressed, you know, historically since slavery, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Trump got us into, oh my God, it's just Twitter and ridiculous attacks that don't mean anything. And as much as, and now people are dying because of something he is mismanaging.
Exactly.
Right? So now exactly. There are actual real consequences, and we don't have the luxury to go back to like, isn't his Twitter crazy? The tantrum of the day. Now it's like, you're killing people. Yeah. Your stupidity is killing people. And we really need you. Everyone in every state needs Trump to get the hell out of the way, to put him in the dustbin of history and move on.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I mean, you alluded to this, but let's just make it really explicit. People are dying of the sort and in the places that more voters will see. Look, there were a lot of people who had a lot of empathy for, you know, families being separated, kids being caged and dying on the border. There might be some people that are interested in our support that's killing civilians in Yemen, or the fact that he massively increased drone strikes and airstrikes in Syria that killed tons of people. Like all of this is a death count, but there's a lot of voters that are going to ignore that stuff or not prioritize that stuff. But now Americans are dying, so they're going to take it a little bit more seriously. It's Friday, and so it's time to take out the trash. Thank you for joining us once again for Garbage People. Brett is here, and he's got his garbage person ready to go. Mine first, though. My garbage person... Oh, and by the way, I do have my trash. My garbage person, who you're going to see more of, is an individual, but sort of just a symbolic individual. It's going to be... this very angry man screaming at the cops in the Michigan State Capitol. I'm gonna keep him here for a little bit. We have a bit more from that scene. Take a look. Okay, so just to be clear, my garbage people this week are going to be mainly the armed individuals of these anti-lockdown protests. These are going to be a collection of militia members, and there's some white supremacists mixed up in there, and there's some Proud Boys, depending on where you go. And it's grifters and opportunists and extremists that don't care at all about this pandemic, but they don't care about the protest in regard to the pandemic. They're here, as they always are, because they want to intimidate the government to make themselves feel strong, to have an effect on society, whatever. And potentially for some of them, as has been very clear, I mean, look at the write-ups of anti-extremist reporters, to spark some sort of civil conflict. Many of them have been very explicit about that. That's not the majority or anything like that, but they are willing to threaten people, endanger lives, imply that they're ready to start violence, literally in government. I mean, take a look at this picture. So there's a tweet from a state senator. Directly above me, men with rifles yelling at us. Some of my colleagues who own bulletproof vests are wearing them. I've never appreciated our sergeants at arms more than today. So you have legislators meeting as they are ringed above by guys with guns. It is a pull of a trigger away from the premise for The Handmaid's Tale, effectively. And the implication is there. Thankfully, they haven't started shooting yet. But how many of them are waiting for it, or waiting for a spark, honestly?
Yeah, it's so stupid. When you have an assault, I don't know if this is fair to say, but like when you're that guy and you have an assault rifle, you are just, everything feels like an opportunity to just whip it out in front of people. Mm-hmm. Like, dude, just go get a big truck. Just go get a big truck and throw some truck nuts on it. Don't bring your assault rifle down to the Capitol. Something that got sent around to like our pitch channel that a bunch of people, the entire company can pitch stories from 8 Show. And the response that I saw that was the best is like, this is the epitome of white privilege. Like if you are any other race, creed, or color, and you go down to the state capitol with an assault rifle and full-on military fatigues and a bulletproof vest, like, you get shot on the way there. Mm-hmm. Someone that's dressed like that guy shoots you, period. And then it's not really clear whether you are ever going to get your day in court. Yeah. Whether your family will ever get the day in court to, you know, avenge your death by, you know, availing themselves of the kinds of legal recourses that that guy, that right winger in the militia with the AR-14, which stands for assault rifle gun, is availing himself of.
They hate that so much when they say
that. It does. And then it's funny because they don't know that it stands for assault rifle.
Mm-hmm. They don't. Why don't they know that? Just Google it, people. But anyway, yeah, there's the obvious racial component. I mean, the fact that they're spitting in the face of cops, these guys who say all the time, like, it's always the same thing. Respect the cops, respect the soldiers. I kind of feel like feeling strong and scary, so I am willing to spit in their face. And if it comes down to it, I will begin shooting them. I will shoot cops in the head during the civil war that I've been dreaming of my entire life. I mean, the fact that Donald Trump is tweeting that the governor should give in. So
he says there's good people on both sides.
There's good people. I mean, he's telling us who these people are right there. But think about it. If only there was a term for getting guns and implying that there might be violence to terrorize political figures into giving you what you want. There should be a term for it. That would be convenient right about now. What do you think, Brett?
Well, I just think Trump is never concerned with leading America. He's only ever concerned with leading America in the polls. Mm-hmm. And he needs to lead. But all he's ever done, the only reason that the curve has flattened has nothing to do with Donald Trump, period. Mm-hmm. 100%. It is Trump has always looked, and I get some horns from the truck nut people out there. I don't know if you heard that. But Trump has only made decisions relative to the actions of other people who are taking this seriously. Mm. So when Gavin Newsom and Andrew Cuomo were like, we need to do something, we need to actually take action, that's when Trump changed his tune. And everyone else who is reasonable and respects the scientific method or just being careful, like, they're the ones that made the decisions. And now Trump is the one. And then Trump was the one who was like, I'm going to try to win this political battle and then also position myself strategically so it is revealed to everyone with a brain that the only thing I'm trying to do is win in November.
Yeah.
And so instead of making good decisions, he's really put himself in a very transparent position for me because I follow the news, where he says to Democratic governors, you really need to appease my base. But in states where he's more shored up, like in Georgia, he doesn't want the base to go out and die. Mm-hmm. So when the governor is actually in a position and is only responding to Trump's messaging the way it is on Twitter, because that's the closest he can get, when Brian Kemp is, I'm going to reopen Georgia, Trump then goes to him and says, you shouldn't do that, mm-hmm. because he knows there will be negative consequences for doing what the Republican governors have been trying to get happen, and positive consequences from a medical standpoint if you do continue common sense lockdown and just be careful. As we learn more, we're going to open it up. But everyone just sits there and is like, I will find some statistic buried in some report that I can just feel good about retweeting a crappy meme of, whether it's accurate or not, so I can feel some kind of moral superiority.
That's what Twitter's for, feeling superior. Not wearing a mask, so I heard it was because the mask isn't his wife and he's afraid he might kiss it. That's what I heard. Someone tweeted that, I don't know. So that's your garbage person, Mike Pence?
That's my garbage person, Mike Pence, not just because of the original action, but for everything that has happened since then that has proved that he is the garbagiest of garbage people. His wife, Karen Pence, went on Fox and did an interview and was asked about the whole mask incident. And here's her response. First, she says, that's a great question. I'm glad that you asked me. Mother, it seems like I'm glad that you asked me. It's like, the reason you're on is to talk about that, lady.
Yeah.
And they told you they would ask you about that. And she's like, just do me the courtesy of not calling me an idiot by saying, oh, wow, I guess, we aren't going to talk about my recipe for pies and the sexual positions my husband and I do not Anyways, she says it was actually after he left the Mayo Clinic that he found out that they had a policy of asking everyone to wear a mask. So, you know, someone has worked on this whole task force for over 2 years is not someone who would have done anything to offend or hurt anyone or scare anyone. I'm glad that you gave me the opportunity to talk about that. Again, so stupid. But she says she says he found out that they had the policy of asking everyone to wear a mask after he left for the Mayo Clinic. First of all, it's the Mayo Clinic. If you're on the task force, you should have a mask. So when you get there and they say, here, wear a mask. Mm-hmm. And also, then you should put it on. Also, that contradicts the reason he gave. He said, I just want to look them in the eye and say that I appreciate your work. I don't know what mask you're wearing, but like, I don't think it goes here. I think it goes down here.
I think it's latex.
But not just that. I wish it was. Go ahead. Deep. The Steve Herman, who's a local reporter, tweeted out, all of us who traveled with him were notified by the office of the vice president the day before the trip that wearing masks was required by the Mayo Clinic and to prepare accordingly. So the day before, Pence's own pimps told them, you gotta put your damn mask on. So it came from them. And then in the wake of that, to pile the garbage on, Mike Pence, it was reported that Mike Pence's team threatened it was the Post reported that Pence's office alleged Herman had violated an off-the-record agreement by publicizing a planning document for the visit. So not just that he originally lied, not just that he got caught, because he got caught, they went after Herman for essentially sharing this information and hid behind that this was an official planning document. He didn't share your damn schedule. You already went to the place. It's not like he told everyone that the vice president's motorcade is going by this grassy knoll later.
Yeah, it's bad to do it. It's garbagey to continue to lie about it. Just put on a mask, honestly. Tell Trump to, too.
It continues. Pence's office later told VOA manager, VOA is the news outlet that reporter is from, that any punishment was still under discussion pending an apology from the reporter, who shouldn't have had to apologize, who's only pointing out that you lied in a way that triggers you so much that now you're going to punish him for it. And not only that, Mike Pence went to a factory in Indiana, and we have a graphic of how this all turns out. Oh, you're wearing a mask.
Okay. Let's
tour a factory.
He can
just
learn.
Revealing. And I think that's the essence of garbage people. When you really expose some terrible aspect of this person's personality, and then they continue to be that garbagey, but at least pretend to care about some hidden principle. But then at the end, they gave up. They gave up, but they're not going to apologize.
Exactly. Yeah, you'll get no apology. The reporter will get no apology. Very good choice, Brett.
And since it's on my phone, I'm going to, again, for the fifth straight week, I have to throw this phone out now.
You're burning through phones, man. So now it's time to see what did the audience think. So we polled. We gave people four choices based on the messages we had received. The choices were Mike Pence, Mitch McConnell, obviously always garbage, Trump, and Tommy Lauren. And we had over 12,000 votes on this poll. And by a good margin, Donald Trump is the TDR community garbage person of the week for insert a reason, because there's a lot of them. Generally, when he's on the poll, he does win. Look, he has the biggest impact on our lives in terms of policy and stuff like that. So that makes sense. Bear in mind, if you win one week, you cannot be on the poll the next week. So we're going to see who takes the crown from him when it comes to next week. From the point of view of a perspective, the primary did not turn out the way perhaps we had hoped or even thought that it was for the first few months of the voting. But we're at where we're at. And so the new question is, what should the left be doing to move the country to where it needs to be? And there are a few people I can think of better suited to help us come to grips with the situation we're in than the executive director of the Justice Democrats, Alexandra Rojas. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Very glad to have you on. I've very much appreciated over the past bit your contributions, to cable news. It's the sort of voice that we don't often hear. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit more later on. But I've been wondering, since you and Justice Democrats have been so important in helping to propel the left forward electorally over the past few years, It looks like Bernie is not going to be the nominee now. And so I'm curious, what are some of your just general thoughts about how this has affected the fight on the left and where we go from here?
Yeah, well, first, I want to, it's not great to not win. It doesn't feel good. And so I know that we're still all going through our own process on sort of this moment, not just with what's happening at the presidential, right? But sort of the context that we're in, given the pandemic, given millions of people losing their jobs, and obviously all of us, our friends, families being affected by that. So first and foremost, I think there's that. But in terms of, you know, where we go from here, what do progressives do now that Bernie is not going to be at the top of the ticket? And as executive director of Justice Democrats, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that all of the work that we've been doing, yes, we've been wanting to get Bernie Sanders elected. We want to defeat Donald Trump, but it's also really critical for us to pay attention to what's happening in Congress. And we can see right now, in light of the pandemic, how critical it is that we elect a new generation of leaders that are going to fight like hell to center poor and working people, because they're getting left behind in all of the legislation and from where it could be. So I think that, you know, one thing for progressives to think about, especially as we think about not just in November, but in the long term, is how do we build a bench of leaders in Congress who are going to really hold the line on critical issues like the ones that we're facing right now, but the ones that we know we're going to be facing in the future. So there's progressives like Jamal Bowman, who are running out in New York's 16th district. He's going up against someone like Elliot Engel, who's a corporate Democrat, where I think that we have, you know, a small amount of volunteer energy, a small amount of small dollars compared to the presidential race, where there's hundreds of millions, right, being spent. These races, we can really turn the needle and build out what we're seeing with what the squad is being effective in doing right now.
I think 100%. So if there are some people watching this, maybe that identify as progressives and feel a little bit deflated about the prospect of a Biden presidency, you think that perhaps channeling some of their energy into these lower races might be a good way to move forward then?
I think that is a good way. I think it's important for us to recognize what's at stake right now. We have to defeat Donald. Having a Donald Trump as president is going to set us back in terms of our ability as a movement to just, you know, be able to respond to this moment where we're having to basically fight to keep what we have right now. That would be a different environment under a Joe Biden administration. And so to look forward to holding a Joe Biden administration accountable, we should focus our efforts on Congress as we also, you know, seek to defeat Donald Trump, but really, really start as progressives to focus on where we can build legislative power to actualize the political revolution that Bernie is talking about, that all of us are fighting for, to be able to, you know, see these things within our lifetime.
So it sounds like you believe that potentially Biden could be pressured in some areas. I'm curious, what are some of the topics that you think perhaps strategically are worthy of the most attention, that he's perhaps more easily able to be moved on? And are there any areas that you think that it's unlikely that progressives are going to be able to move him?
Well, I think that we have to be really clear right now. Joe Biden has sent a number of signals to what he thinks of progressive priorities when it comes to Medicare for All. I don't expect Joe Biden to move on an issue like that. And I think we recently put out a letter alongside a number of other Gen Z, millennial groups, basically calling on Joe Biden to adopt a number of policy positions, a number of personnel decisions. And the reason why we tried to lay that out is really make the case for why he needs to earn the votes of our generation, but pretty much everyone under the age of 45, if he wants to be able to defeat Donald Trump. And the reason why we harped especially on personnel is because we know that personnel is policy. And when you see him presenting folks like Larry Summers, it's extremely, extremely problematic. So we're going to continue to up the pressure. And I think our ability right now to put pressure through that letter and through other means on Joe Biden on very, very specific measures. There's even certain policies where on healthcare, like he can move right now. And so there's groups like us and Sunrise that are working to continue to keep up the pressure, especially for the rest of the primary.
So it seems pretty clear that he's not going to be any sort of leader for the left. I mean, up until recently, at least electorally, we had Bernie Sanders for that. In terms of elections, it looks like that's probably not going to be the future. Are there any individuals that leap out to you as potential leaders for the movement in the future, or should we even be focused on that? Does it matter if we have sort of a figurehead or a leader?
I think the latter of what you just said. I think it's really important that we recognize that take it from Bernie, right? Not me, us was his whole campaign slogan. Mm-hmm. And that's because our collective solidarity as people to be able to overcome the immense challenges that are faced before us with this pandemic, and obviously defeating Donald Trump and just the institutional barriers that we as progressives face in the Democratic Party. It's really important that we recognize that in this moment, there are a new generation of leaders like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, like Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, and Bernie and others that are really trying to, you know, or show that there is this, that they're more reflective of where the rest of the country is at. And that's going to require all of us to not just be so focused on a figurehead, but really in this awesome power that we've all been able to create and Bernie has been able to channel through a presidential campaign. And now I know he's going to be able to channel it through how we respond to this pandemic and obviously enacting a progressive agenda over the years.
So in addition to, you know, being the executive director of the Justice Democrats, for a while now, you've been a political commentator on CNN. I think I'm trying to come up with another person that is as regularly on, that is as on the left as you. You're still fairly singular in that area. So overall, how has the experience been? Is it at all frustrating to often be on panels sort of overwhelmed by people that disagree quite a bit with you politically?
Well, I'll answer it in a few ways. Well, one, right now in the pandemic, it's been hard for not just progressives, but I think anyone that is not a health expert, right? That's not a medical expert, because people want to hear from their public health officials. At the same time, there are moments like what we saw this morning with Joe Biden going on MSNBC. There's the presidential race that is still there. So I'm sure that that's going to change soon as we focus on politics and how that's impacted by the pandemic. So I haven't been able to go on lately, but hopefully I get to go on again soon. And I think in general, I just am, you know, grateful for the experience. I think that I see this as a position where hopefully I can elevate the mission of Justice Democrats, where I can elevate what we're trying to all fight for in this movement, especially on issues that matter when it comes like to healthcare right now, when it comes to the economy, after we're seeing what's decimated. And what's been interesting is that there's great commentators that where we've debated things like Green New Deal, we've debated things like Medicare for All, and especially right now where the pandemic just shows all of the gaps that we're facing in our healthcare system and how unprepared, even how horrifying Trump has responded to this, America has been in responding to it, and our ability to coordinate at the level that we need to is astounding, and it proves what we're talking about. So I'm really motivated to go back on and share, I think, what the ideas and solutions that are inevitable right now when it comes to thinking about how we tackle climate change, Medicare for All, or guaranteeing healthcare as a human right and all of that.
I certainly hope that they have you on soon. They need you in a very real sense. Zooming out a little bit, I'm curious, it seemed like over the past year or so, CNN especially, and I also want to give credit specifically to Chris Cuomo, has been sort of much more open to having on people who are very open. They're, you know, on the left, they're progressive, DSA members, socialists, whatever. And my fear is that was an openness that might have been being driven by the fact that Bernie Sanders was in the race and it looked like there was a good chance of him winning. And that if that was the direction the Democratic Party was moving in, it would make sense for them to have on more voices that represent that. My fear is that, like, you know, Cenk of the Young Turks was being brought on a lot, Anna Kasparian. I had just joined Chris Cuomo right before the pandemic hit. I sort of fear that those opportunities might not come back when normal things resume. if Joe Biden signals, you know, the continued strength of the centrist wing of the Democratic Party. Do you think that there might be some basis for that fear, or are you optimistic that those opportunities will return?
I'm optimistic that the opportunities are going to return, because I know that we're not letting up on the pressure. I know that all of you guys aren't letting up on the pressure. And I think that, you know, that might be a factor, but so is the pandemic that set, I think, progressives infrastructurally, right, back a little bit. The status quo is able to continue to rake in, at least on the campaign side, right, lots of corporate cash in a way that, you know, we as progressives don't do. We also are not in the same level of having the same levels of access to the mainstream media. But I'm confident that as we move forward for this process, right, and we not only focus on the presidential, but we focus on Congress, that, you know, we're going to have to make them pay attention to these races, which is why, again, don't mean to be cheesy, but it really does matter. Marie Newman was a Justice Democrat that was just elected recently in Illinois, defeating Dan Lipinski. In the last week and a half, I believe that Sunrise, the folks on the ground, and our team, we made over 200,000 calls, and we were able to win that election by turning our base out. And so it really, really matters where you put your dollars right now, where you put your volunteer energy. Don't watch Netflix, or at least watch it, but also phone bank for some of these candidates, where it really is going to make up the difference and go a long way. And it'll feel really good connecting with voters right now to check in, to see how they're doing amidst all of this, to see how their families are doing, and let them know that there's an incredible progressive that is fighting for them, hopefully come 2020.
And finally, on the media, we've got Biden, and there's a lot of news, some of it old, some of it new, that does not necessarily always reflect very positively on Joe Biden. And it has seemed, especially recently, like, for instance, with the allegations that have been made against Joe Biden by Tara Reid, that the media was very hesitant to directly address this news, especially until the primary appears to have been wrapped up. It appears, as an outsider, that they might take it seriously hypothetically internally, but if covering this news is going to make the chance of him beating Donald Trump a little bit lower, that they might not be willing to engage with that, which I get strategically why they might think that, but I care about the truth, and I care about the experience of these individuals, and so I want to make sure that their stories are told. Do you think that the media might shy away from certain topics if it raises the chance of getting Donald Trump elected? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that the media right now is going to chase where the story is. And so there's obviously MSNBC had the interview with Joe Biden this morning where they pressed on a lot of these questions. And I think that it's totally, you know, like what you said, it is your responsibility to, follow the news and verify its legitimacy. And I think especially in moments like this for the Democratic Party, we can't be hypocritical on our commitment to saying that when we believe women, we do. So I think that the media definitely has a lot of responsibility in how they cover this. And, each network is doing their own things, but I think it's journalists' responsibility right now to cover it as accurately as possible and not insert, the dynamics of the presidential race.
Okay. Alexandra Rojas, as always, we appreciate you joining the show, and we couldn't value more the work that you do with Justice Democrats, but also for representing the left on CNN. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.